You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. This episode of GameScoop is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're looking for a way to make your business stand out and succeed online, Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for you. They take the stress out of creating an awesome website, engaging with your audience, and selling anything from products to content to time, so you're able to focus on, you know, everything else. In other words, you'll have more time for gaming. With the new guided design system, you can choose from curated layouts and styling options to build a unique online presence from the ground up, optimized for every device. And with Squarespace's integrated, optimized SEO tools, you'll show up more often to more people. Squarespace doesn't just make things easier for you. Checkout for your customers is made seamless with simple but powerful payment tools that allow you to accept credit cards, PayPal, and Apple Pay, and in eligible countries, offer the option to buy now and pay later with Afterpay and Clearpay. So whether you're just starting out or looking to expand your existing brand, be sure to visit squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/gamescoop to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/gamescoop for 10% off. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week is Tina Amini.
What's up, everybody?
Sam Claiborne.
It's a new set.
And Justin Davis.
Scoop.
We've got a great show for you this week. I know last week I said that episode 600 was coming up, but then I remembered, foolish me, I remembered that it's unlucky to have a 600th episode the week before Halloween. So we're going to save 600 for next week. And this is just an episode of Game Scoop. Not a numbered episode. It's an episode.
Yeah. You didn't find out which one we missed?
Oh, I know which one we missed because that one is also unlucky.
Oh, that's right.
It's like the White Album.
Yeah.
So now we're going to be off by two?
No, we're supposed to be.
Okay. This is the self-titled episode of Game Scoop.
Right.
Exactly.
It's just called Game Scoop, Game Scoop.
The podcast formerly known as Game Scoop.
Scoop of Games.
It's still going to be a great show. We're going to talk about the biggest achievements that we saw over this generation of gaming as this generation goes over the horizon as the sun sets and we begin a new generation. Whoa, I'm hearing some interesting issues there.
It might have been me. I'm going to mute for a sec, but I'll stay here.
Okay. Well, you're going to want to hear. You're not muted. Nintendo just announced they are localizing one of their older games for the first time ever, which is pretty exciting for gamers of a certain ilk, like myself.
I don't think it's exciting for anybody.
I'm excited, and Pear's excited.
Yeah, I saw Pear's excited. That's true.
But first, a little Hobbit humor.
Okay.
So Bilbo Baggins was suddenly awoken by somebody singing "Don't Stop Believin'." It was an unexpected journey.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Good.
And
you're going to break into song and dance.
Because Journey, the band, wrote "Don't Stop Believing."
Thank you for explaining.
We're bringing it home.
The best jokes are the ones you explain afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I've always
knows.
Said that.
We begin with listener email. So let's go ahead and check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Baker did. And
First
Baker
of all,
says,
this is the most efficient show ever. We're almost to 20 questions.
That's what you can do when it's not a numbered episode. It frees you up.
It's not even an episode.
Damon, you know what we should do? Every April Fool's Day in my house, we eat the meals backwards. So we have like spaghetti for breakfast.
Oh my gosh. It's crazy. So
I think that we should do that next April.
Okay.
You know, one day your daughters are going to catch on that you're not doing ice cream for breakfast.
That's true. You really should be starting with dessert.
Yeah, they got to eat their growing foods first, even on a silly day.
I do like the idea of starting with 20 questions, but working backwards. So
give us the
answer. Yeah, exactly. What are the questions that are associated? It's Jeopardy version.
Like, I don't know if you guys have noticed this either, but we're getting the laugh track of John Borba right now, which is like everything ever. I think we should keep it.
I think so too. I think so too.
Because he's definitely laughed at my jokes, which I really appreciate.
This episode of Game Scoop was filmed in front of a studio audience of one. Okay, Baker. Email from Baker, who says,
okay.
I was a diehard 360 gamer, but in 2012, I got sucked into the tabletop board game scene and ended up entirely skipping the Xbox One and PS4 generation.
Cool.
Now I'm coming back and managed to successfully land an Xbox Series S pre-order. That's very impressive. Pretty excited, since even the launch games will feel next-gen to me, since I haven't played anything since 2013-ish. In preparation, I have resubscribed to GameScoop to try and get reacclimated to the current gaming landscape. I'm curious what y'all would say are some of the major advancements, graphically, user interface, peripherals, etc., that have happened in the last 7 years I've been gone, besides the obvious that it all just looks better.
Hmm. Mm, great question.
So hair looks better, faces look worse.
Is that true? I know they still haven't really gotten lip syncing for the most part.
Well, it's uncanny valley, right? The closer you get to realistic faces, the weirder they weird you out.
And also hair hasn't really begun to look better. Once they can get long hair working well, then we know we're at a good juncture with video games and graphics.
I thought Final Fantasy VII had some pretty good stubble in it.
Mm. Good stubble.
Yeah.
Yeah, the reason why long hair is difficult is just because of physics. Like, it'll start clipping into your shoulders. So people always, like, you'll see, like, you know, female characters with long hair. It's always up in a ponytail or something, like, to kind of distract from that. That's been their solution. So that's my barometer. Because we got watered down. Water's looking pretty good this generation.
Water's looking great. Yeah, ponytails are looking good, too. If you have to put hair at some format, you might as well just ponytail it.
The ponytail is also practical.
That's true, because video games are definitely known for practical wear.
Well, I've had a ponytail before in my life, and it never clipped into my shoulder.
And that's because you live in the real world.
I think that's kind of a Pixar didn't happen scenario.
You're not seeing me with long hair? When did I start IGN? Okay,
well, 2007 or 8. Yeah,
I'm gonna need to see on a potato first.
Yeah, for sure.
Tina, has hair improved since 2013's Tomb Raider reboot? Maybe it wasn't 2012. Yeah,
not really. I wanted, like, Final Fantasy VII did have some interesting hairstyles and some longer hair. Like, Tifa had longer hair and it was down. So that was okay. I think they just parted it specifically. So, yes, to a degree.
Those bees look really good in Super Mario Galaxy. They're very hairy.
Oh, yeah. Did we ever come down on whether or not the bees have fur? It's called fur.
Exactly. Yeah. I saw a very furry spider yesterday. And it freaked me out. I think what we're kind of beating around here is that games have hit like a point where like graphics are good now. Things can look good, but like art styles are the things that are standing out to us more, not really graphical big leaps and bounds, which is a cool time to be in.
Agreed.
Yeah. I think, like, what was it? Rockstar was peddling around Red Dead 2. Like, there were bear mark scratches in the trees. And they were like, look how cool these scratches are. Just because, like, there's a level of detail now. So I guess you can consider that more artistic value, where you can actually render that much more detail. And allegedly, the next-gen consoles will be able to do even more than that. So that's like
a really good point.
Additive thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I have my real answer to this question is that everything is open world now. And that's a trend that started the generation before with games like Assassin's Creed, and, like, you know, obviously things like Grand Theft Auto have, you know, always been open world, but now there's an expectation that, like, if a game like Dishonored comes out and it's not open world, everyone's like, oh, that's a little weird, that's surprising. Like, I feel like it's become the default for any, like, big AAA game, is that it is going to be open, or at the very least wide linear, which is also a term that's probably been coined over the last generation. Meaning games like Uncharted or like Gears 5 that take you through sort of section by section, but then within each section, there's like big open spaces that you can explore. Last of Us 2 as well fits into that bucket.
They're also, I think last generation, the big thing used to be you can play anyway, like you can stealth or you can go guns blazing. That was the sort of thing that I always heard on the PR preview beats. Mm-hmm. And I think this generation finally accepted that as like, okay, every game kind of has an element that is no longer special, but you can make your own choices that semi impact the narrative in one way or another. So that became a little bit more popularized too.
Do you remember how, go ahead, Damon.
Well, I was going to sort of agree with both Justin and Tina's points. When I think about something like Assassin's Creed, something that started out pretty, narrowly focused on recreating the experience of an ancient assassin has now become like a jack of all trades. It's, you can still assassinate people, but you can also just go in with a combat focus if you want. And there is huge open world exploration. And now there's crafting systems, it's just like... Okay. Everything that they can throw into those games now, they throw in there.
Yeah.
Please.
Someone go.
Go, Justin.
I was just going to say that everything is an RPG now.
That's true.
Which is another trend that I think started last generation, but like now every single system, every single game has to have like a skill system and crafting system and, gear and loot. That's really, really pervasive in AAA gaming in a way that I don't think it had quite gotten there last gen.
When the original Borderlands came out, we thought, me and some other folks at IGN, thought it was so weird and crazy that numbers flew out of people when you shot them.
Love it. And
now that's just every game, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was such a unique concept to marry certain RPG elements, but it turns out progression is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And being able to see that you're actually making progress. Do you remember when there'd be bosses where you didn't even know if you were hurting them? And then they added bosses that kind of like changed color a little bit in old games. It's really funny. It used to be like, I don't know if I'm actually killing this boss and I'm 15 minutes into it. I hated that.
But they would also do the opposite where sometimes things would have two health bars. Oh,
yeah. Yeah,
it's horrible.
The health bar goes all the way down. And then all of a sudden it's like green health bar. I think that's
what
I
did recently. I don't mind
those shields.
I don't mind that if you can see. Yeah, if you can see the next level underneath, as long as they're being transparent, like you just said, if it's green, yellow, then red, and then they're really dead. As long as they're being transparent about it.
Everybody's nursery rhyme.
Green, yellow, red, then dead.
Then you know they're dead.
I did that on purpose.
Yeah,
I absolutely did that on purpose.
There's a level of non-graphical fidelity that's been added to games in the form of acting and performance, which last generation we were all like amazed when Portal 2 came out. We're like, this is incredible. This whole game is acted so well and it's really cleverly written. That's now in the most impressive games still have like really impressive amounts of that, but it's just blown up so much that even Assassin's Creed, like every line in Assassin's Creed, when you're just walking around talking to people, is like acted and well scripted and good. And like Assassin's Creed's like a AAA game, but it's like, I expect that out of Red Dead a lot more than I expected out of Assassin's Creed, but we get it with Assassin's Creed now. And you get it with lots of games. Even indie games can be really well acted and scripted, even if they have like cartoon-like cutscenes or something like that. Mm-hmm.
Mocap is more of a staple now. Even like using celebrities in your games become more of a staple too if you have a budget for it. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely like an emphasis on narrative, but performance too.
Yep.
More DLC cinematic. Is cool now.
And we free a lot.
Is it?
Yeah. DLC used to be like, oh, they're cramming this stuff in and, nobody wants a half-shipped game. We're paying full price for it. But nobody has those complaints really anymore. I think people are excited. Like when the Control DLC came out, people were over the moon to have a reason to revisit it. And they kind of consider it as, oh, the developers are now working on this next project. And it's about sustaining that game shelf life, not about squeezing more money out of you. Like, I think the perspective has changed, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. The perspective used to be, it's not on the disc. Why did I buy the disc then? And that like, you barely hear that expressed if at all anymore. And I think like, that's exactly what I look forward to. If I love a game, I'm excited that in 3 months or whatever, there'll be more content for it. And I definitely didn't feel that way initially. I was like, I feel like I just bought, 90% of a game.
Speaking of buying the disc, over the past generation, fewer people are buying the disc, and now the majority of game sales are digital.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. And there's also like this, there's genres that have come and gone and genres that are like really prevalent right now. And one that's prevalent right now is this is a more industry term. I know people don't know it as well, but it's games of service or Destiny likes, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, that is the whole point of it is DLC. and downloading stuff and making sure you're part of that game. And people kind of have like, it's almost like what MMOs were like 10 years ago. There's like kind of factional interest in those type of games. And like, you might just play this one game for a long time, but it doesn't have to be an MMO anymore.
Mm-hmm. Orba brings up battle royales are also a feature of this generation too, and that became widely popularized and expanded into many other territories.
That's and I guess true. The hero shooter as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which well, wasn't new because like Team Fortress had done that, but you know, Overwatch certainly gave that genre a jolt of life, right? Games like Warframe, I believe.
But battle royales, that's 100% like that's a contemporary thing that if you didn't have a system over the past 7 years, like you haven't played a battle royale because there just wasn't an example of one.
Unless you're playing on PC or mobile, but sure.
Yeah, your iPhone.
Yeah.
Not Fortnite anymore.
Yeah, if you hadn't already downloaded it. I think a big trend in the indie gaming space has been the resurgence of roguelikes, spurred on largely by Spelunky, but then also games like Binding of Isaac. There's just so many roguelikes. I feel like every week there's new roguelikes coming out, and they're not all great, but there are a lot of really good ones and a lot of different genres. There's, you know, side-scrolling platformers like Spelunky and like Rogue Legacy, but then there's like turn-based strategy roguelikes like Into the Breach, and dungeon crawler, turn-based dungeon crawlers like Darkest Dungeon. So that's definitely something that grew over the last 7 years, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then with that, membership models too, where you can like subscribe to an online and a deals service with whatever mm-hmm. your console of choice is and get bundles of things. Mm-hmm. Also backward compatibility. There's lots of new stuff this generation.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about it, since Baker pre-ordered an Xbox Series S, Justin, we've talked a lot on the show about how great it is to get a console at the end of its life.
Oh, it's the best. It.
But like buying an Xbox Series S is kind of just the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because he gets access to every game in the Xbox One library.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, well, there's all those games on Game Pass, right? So I strongly mm-hmm. recommend that he subscribe to Game Pass for a few months at least. But yeah, like the store. Like Xbox is so progressive in that way where I had a urge, this is over a year ago now, but like I had a real urge to revisit like SSX, and I was able to just, you know, our games like Symphony of the Night, and like that was an Xbox 360 live arcade game, was just able to log in, buy it, install it on my Xbox One, the same as if it were a game released on that console. Like that seamless backwards compatibility is going to be a real godsend for someone that like dipped out of gaming and is now back.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of remakes and Nintendo just, you know, doing old games all over again, that's been a theme too.
wait, what do you mean? Like specifically?
For this generation, like, I guess they're not, I guess Baker's not counting Nintendo necessarily. But regardless, like this generation has had a lot of like reissuing of games or porting of games.
Well, yeah, remakes. Yeah.
It's the year of remakes, as we heard in 20 Questions last week.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
I mean, seriously, that's like that was around before, but like now there's so much nostalgia packed into marketing and like the way to, you know, like the biggest Nintendo game this fall is three old Nintendo games. I mean, that's and it's totally accepted. People were super hyped for it. Like they're just really, really pleased to get that package and also really angry about what wasn't in that package because they wanted more remakes.
I think you could also attribute the more mainstream focus of VR to this generation too. More towards the tail end, but that's certainly become a big staple of this generation.
Yep, yeah. Was it Polygon that had I think it was Polygon has that really interesting feature right now. As like VR has been 5 minutes away for like 8 years now. And like, it can't quite break through. Like everyone's like, it's right around the corner. And it never quite gets there. But, it's still growing, right? Like every year VR is still bigger than it was the year before. It's continuing to sort of slowly trudge up the mountain and, you know, remains to be seen whether it is going to take over the mainstream or not. But this was definitely the biggest year for VR ever. And, you know, thanks to Half-Life Alyx and the Oculus Quest 2. So, you know, we'll see what happens in the future, but that's definitely something that if you dipped out of games in like 2013, none of that was really here yet.
You know what you would have missed if you didn't have the last gen is you would have missed the Kinect, which was really strange. That was a really weird time.
Well, but the Kinect was on 360.
Yeah, that's true. But it came with the Xbox One.
Yeah, for a time.
Do you think it hooks up to the 1S?
I don't know about that. That's interesting. I don't know.
I wonder if, so if he was only doing board games, I want him to write back in and let us know. Like, he's probably playing Pandemic Legacy and Gloomhaven and all the big AAA hottest board games. I want to know more about that.
What about something that's become ubiquitous in any open world game is a photo mode.
Oh yeah, photo modes.
Yeah.
Just Ghost really, has the best one.
Ghost is really good.
I just played through the part in Breath of the Wild where you get like a camera and they force you to start using it and stuff. And I didn't remember this, but in that game, you know, you can complete that game by taking like 1,000 photos of like every single animal and dragonfly and blade of grass, which is so crazy.
You can complete the game by doing that?
Well, you know, it's like if you're going to 100% it.
Oh, okay.
You would have to get all of these photos and they're obnoxious.
John, we might be able to hear you, your keyboard.
What John
he's just
typed
typing,
us.
Lol, 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 lol.
he says that we can hear him, but the audience cannot hear him.
Oh, oh really? Man. That's I wouldn't mind if the, if his laugh track was on the actual.
Wow. Final it's been a confusing 15 minutes.
No, I was going to say that.
Not having an episode number starting at the end, hearing laughs out of nowhere. I think this episode might be haunted.
Ooh, it is spooky season.
Ooh, wow.
We need to get the soundboard for Damon and just put Borba's laugh on it.
Awesome. Sounds like Zangief.
Or Karnov. Borba, you should think about being a Karnov for Halloween sometime. A couple other things. There are share buttons on the controllers that allow you to immediately upload game footage to social. That's something totally new to this generation. Hmm. And another like type of game that I think is very unique to this generation is the Twitch bait game. The game that maybe isn't all that great and is kind of janky, but it can be kind of funny to look at or watch people play. And if they can get a popular streamer to play their game, then maybe their game will find some success that way.
Yeah,
you know what the first game I remember that being was the goat simulator.
That's what I was gonna say. Is like a close relation to the Twitch bait game is a game that's like bad on purpose.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Like Quap.
What totally realistic battle simulators? Is that what it's called? Something like that. All right, I think we've covered off on every advancement we saw this generation.
We didn't miss anything.
Yeah,
it wasn't as exciting as I thought it would be.
Happy game on this generation.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't mention games. A couple other features like Sam, you mentioned this earlier, not on this show, but earlier to us about like background installations and updates and suspending games and stuff. So a couple of those features that obviously seeing mirrored in the next generation, too.
Yeah. Do you remember how annoying it was to update your PS3? It would just be horrible thing. Yeah. And now you can have that stuff.
Now you don't need it.
Yeah, and then remote install is the best thing ever. Like, I can go on my phone and like buy a game and install it on my Xbox. It's so good. Like, I think this is the smartest stuff, and that's only going to get better.
Borba just mentioned prohibitively large game install sizes. That's definitely been a theme of this console generation too.
Yeah. There's no such thing as enough space on your SSD. That's just not
you get
possible.
Like two or three games, and then you're tapped.
Yeah, we're at a point. The
next day,
you've got a 500 gig hard drive, and the latest Call of Duty is like 120 gigs.
It's going to be such a problem next gen, where like these $500 consoles have a 1 terabyte hard drive, you know, and the usable space is whatever it is, 900 gigs. And then, you know, games are already 100 gigabytes for a big AAA game.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
And sometimes you get it on disk and you have to install it, and then it's 100 gigabytes and a disk. That's so crazy.
And then you get 100 gigabyte patch after patch.
Yeah, some of those patches are nuts. That's not an exaggeration. I've at least had like a 30 gigabyte patch before. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember Final Fantasy VII got a few in there. I was like, what are they putting in this? Are they putting in entire, you know, like texture packs and levels? It was huge.
Just a new game. They're hoping you don't notice.
Yeah, exactly. It's Final Fantasy VIII Remake. No, it's part two.
There you go.
I reached a point. It's sad. It's always a sad moment when you have a console where my Switch is full. Which that's an SD card, so I can buy a bigger SD card, but then I have to go through the rigmarole of like, you know, dragging everything onto the new SD card. So it's like better than your console hard drive filling up, but it's like, it's the worst. It feels so great for like 2 years or, you know, however active you're playing, maybe a year if you're downloading everything, and then it gets full, and then it's like, oh no, oh no, do I, am I really ready to delete? Then it's like, you know, killing off your children. Like, I don't know. Am I going to play Red Dead ever again? I'm not sure. That was one that I deleted. I finally nixed it off my PS5 or PS4. I'm like, I don't think I'm going back to it.
Yeah. The worst version of that was that on old memory sticks, like, you know, if you had a memory stick, you had to actually delete your
save. You had to delete your saves.
Yeah. You're just like, well, I probably won't be playing Smash Brothers, which I unlocked everything all over in. Like, that's a crazy choice to make.
It was really sad. And then that came.
Or they just wipe themselves. They'd just be dead one day.
Well, and the memory cards on the PS1 had 15 blocks on them, and a game save was like one block. And like, that seems crazy now in the context of 2020, but it's what you had to do in the dark ages.
Mm-hmm.
So Baker has many happy gaming hours ahead of him with his Xbox Series S. Let's each recommend a game from this generation for him to check out. I'll recommend Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
I mean, I don't know. I'm like forgetting everything that came out more than 3 years ago. Red Dead's an obvious one.
Yeah.
I would also say Inside, because I was thinking about it earlier, but there's a spoiler associated with it when we were talking about physics. Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to mention it. It's a short game. Everybody on the planet should play it. It's pretty good, but I'll count that one.
I didn't finish it, and it wasn't like completely for me, but I thought it was like a cool example of a contemporary game was The Witness. I just thought that was like a neat game. And like, if you just have time on your hands and want to play something that, you know, got a 10, check it out.
You jerks took all three of mine.
I just took that one intentionally because I knew.
I literally was about those. That was about to come out of my mouth. You know, I don't know. Like, I'm like Spider-Man, God of War. No. Well, I it's still in my backlog, but I really, really want to play Gears 5 and hear nothing but great things about it. And, you know, when next gen comes around, that, like, I'm super excited to, like, go back and check out Gears. And I'm glad that franchise is, I was going to say turned around. I don't think it was ever bad, but, like, you know, I'm glad that it's still putting out really, really great experiences that people love.
Yeah.
Also, Borba says Witcher 3, which I also highly recommend, even though I got it on Switch. Well.
Yeah,
Witcher 3. And Metal Gear Solid 5.
I was going to say, yeah. As an honorable mention, Metal Gear Solid 5.
Oh, man, Witcher 3 is so great.
Okay. Let's check in with
saying goodbye to Justin.
Yeah. He is
signed. Was cat that,
it was cat asking to get out. Oh no, asking to come in.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's check in with some news today. Nintendo just announced Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon and the Blade of Light. It was the original Fire Emblem game released on the Famicom, I want to say 1990, but was never localized here. It was remade for the DS, which I reviewed. And that
did
was
you
very
really?
Good. Mm-hmm.
Nice.
What'd you give it?
I want to say an 8.5.
We don't do that anymore.
I know.
You have to choose now.
It's from the old times. anyway, but that original Famicom game was never localized here. So it's going to be like the 8-bit version, which I think is very cool. It's coming to the Nintendo eShop. It's not part of going to be part of Nintendo's Switch Online service. It's going to be $6. And it is also bafflingly only going to be available for a limited time until it's out. What day? It's out in December. I didn't write down the release date.
The pre-order is in December, and then they stop selling it at the end of March.
Yeah, March 31st, 2021.
What is going on?
A very annoying thing Nintendo has decided to start doing. I don't know.
What is there any precedent for this?
No, and like the Mario stuff at least had the flimsy, like bad excuse, but it had the excuse of like it's Mario's 35th anniversary. So once the anniversary's over, like the games go away. Like there's absolutely no justification for taking Fire Emblem offline.
Well,
it's crazy.
They're saying it's 35th anniversary, but it's still.
Yeah. Like,
there are a couple of games that they're basically removing on that date. We may or may not be working on a story on that right now. But basically, the one detail that we do know of is that they're in Japan. That's kind of when they close out their end of the year financials.
Yeah. So it's the end of Nintendo's financial year, but still.
Yeah.
I think
I mean, the precedent people compare it to is the Disney tapes, right?
Yeah. Going back in the vault.
Yeah.
Is that what, and they had like, are those like clamshell VHS tapes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They must have taken those
chunky plastic ones.
Yeah. But like those were like only temporarily available for times. Like I didn't even know that was a thing. That's crazy.
They would rotate them in and out.
the Disney Vault was a real thing. Look at how cool this gameplay looks, though. Like, I think it's so cool and unprecedented. Like, this is a total, like, indie developer thing to do, right? Like, it's not a Nintendo thing to do. It's so out of character for them to take this NES game and, like, translate it into a language it's never been in before. Like, I think it's super rad, and I'm excited to see if it's a sign of things to come. It's really out of left field, too, because the game did get a remake, and that was how they sort of brought that game and those characters and characters like Marth, you know, into the U.S. gaming lexicon for the first time. So really unusual and surprising, and you know, I'm pleasantly surprised. I'll buy it for $6 for sure.
That was kind of the premise of their trailer, too. It's like two kids talking like, you don't know Marth? Well, I guess because it was only available in 1990 in Japan. But sure, here's really an explanation. You get to experience Marth.
It's a super self-aware trailer that I thought was really cute because, those characters are in Smash Brothers before they had ever been in an English language game before.
I want to say the first I think the first English language Fire Emblem came to GameCube.
There's a Game Boy Advance one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's that era, though. Game Boy Advance and GameCube are the same era. Where it took, you know, 12 years for Fire Emblem to come here, and it did not take off very quickly. That collector's edition is going to be like so astronomically rare. Like, it's so funny because you can tell, like, Japan has a reason to celebrate Fire Emblem's anniversary. Like, it was a series for 10 years longer than here. Like, it had a lot going for it, and people know about it there. So, like, doing an anniversary special just makes sense. But you can tell they just kind of said, like, okay, let's bring 5,000 of those to the United States and just see how they do. And then they're putting, but that kind of makes sense to me. And it's unfortunate, but translating the whole game in English is crazy. That game is not a small game to translate. It's not like Super Mario Brothers, which has like maybe a page of text in the whole game. And it was in English to begin with. Like, this is crazy. It's whole storylines they translated. And on the NES, that was really difficult to do. Yep. There's like character limits, and the way that Japanese characters work versus English characters, like, it's all difficult to do that. And you saw the result of that on the NES. Like, it wasn't done well. There's like tons of problems with localized NES games. So the fact that somebody went into this basically ROM and ROM hacked it is just crazy. Like, they must have had to take it and just tear it apart and just kind of build it like the NES Remix games from scratch.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm curious about, is did they go in and modify that original ROM and like shove the English language in there, meaning that all the text has to fit in the same number of character boxes?
Can you jump it onto an NES cartridge now?
Yeah, that's my exact question. Maybe they did treat it more like NES Remix. We're like, well, okay, it's not actually an NES ROM. It's just like, you know, it's got a different set of code powering it under the hood. We'll have to see. That collector's edition this afternoon, as we recorded this, went up for pre-order on GameStop.com and sold out in like 8 seconds.
Wow. The anniversary edition, it's $50. It includes an actual physical NES box with an NES game pack and the sleeve. And a 200...
That's like crystal clear, though. It's not like a playable cartridge.
Yeah, it's not. It's an art piece, Nintendo like calls it.
Acrylic art piece.
It also has a 222 page art book and a mini Nintendo Power issue.
Yeah.
Or they call it retro collectible. So, like, I don't know.
It's so cool. It's only, I mean, only in air quotes, but like, it's only $50, which is like, you know, seems like a pretty good deal if you're a big fan. And I'm glad that they specified the page count for that art book, because I have seen a lot of collector's editions that like, it comes with an art book and you get it and then it's just a flimsy piece of junk.
Yeah, two staples and like 12 images.
Yeah, I think this is super cool. It's just another a reminder that you can never really predict what Nintendo is going to be doing next.
I
like Fire Emblem, and I really love turn-based strategy games, but I don't think I played one on the NES ever. It's probably more of a 16-bit game, and it's cool seeing like the two characters at the top of the screen, you know, about to do battle with each other. It immediately brings to mind the Shining Force series on the Sega Genesis, which was probably, you know, close to my first introduction to that whole series. So I don't know. I'm really excited to check out how that plays in an 8-bit game. Sam, do we receive a couple packages in the mail? I know you went into the office recently.
Yes, I did. To the Game Scoop crew, we got a package, and I'll split these up. I'm going to do one this week. This is from the Caraway Tea Company. They know we have some tea fans on staff, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Wayne is a fan and wrote us. And there's a pretty cool thing that he sent us here. So he says, thanks for the opportunity to send you Caraway Tea products and to get them to your cohorts. I'm sending enough tea for the Common Games crew to have 4 teas. But honestly, if someone doesn't enjoy it or want it, that's fine too. You can give it to a neighbor, friend, or someone in the IGN family. He says, tea is not for everyone. Some people are real, all caps, coffee freaks. You know the type. Anyway, that's enjoy really the good. Teas. All right, so I'm going to go through them, and then he said some nice stuff. And okay, so there's a brewing guide for teas here. All right,
wow, this is
and
hardcore.
So it has like the first one. The first one is called Princess Peach. Let me find one. Here we go. Sorry, my wrist was not positioned to do that right. So there's Princess Peach.
Mm-hmm. Wait, is this like officially licensed?
I was gonna say I'm a little.
Yeah, it's like specially labeled these ones, but like it's a full, you know, vacuum sealed consumer brand product. It's not just like in a Ziploc baggie, but yeah. So it's a this one says like the precious princess, this tea will be slightly sweet and beautiful to look at. And I thought that was really cute. I'm not going to read these for all of them, but he says brew 4 to 5 minutes at 212 degrees, wow. Not 210, Damon. Yeah. All right. We also got Resident Evil.
Wow, the tea that's virus. Pretty good. It's good.
Tea virus also in there. There we go.
That. Tea virus. Right.
We got. Oh gosh, I think this is a reference to English breakfast, but Hyrule breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Is that what it's a reference to?
Yeah,
I don't know my teas. Sure. It's like this. And then we have Final Fantasy.
Took a few steps.
Yeah, and it looks like this. So Final Fantasy is it has the ingredients too. It's like organic green tea, organic calendula petals, blueberry pieces, blue mallow mossums, raspberry granules, jasmine flowers, natural blackberry, jasmine flavor. That's a lot of stuff going on this Final Fantasy tea. And then finally, because all of these had good names, and he knows we're a big fan of jokey names, he gave a list of the names that he didn't use.
Oh, wow. The rejections.
Yeah. Samus Orange.
Okay.
The blueberry bomber, and I hate the blue bomber. I think that's so funny. God of Warange, and that's just orange. It's cute, right? All right. And John Borba liked that one. Then we have Green Hill Zone. I guess it's because green tea, right? Green Hill Zone.
Yeah.
That's from Sonic. Wario, you gonna drink that tea?
What? these are a little bit of a stretch.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Teetles 4. Teetles in Time.
Wow. Okay.
Bionic Kamango.
Okay. That one I like.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot more of these.
How many more of these are there?
I'm not going to go anymore. I'm gonna leave some to the imagination. Okay, but I will leave you with Camo Miles Tails Prower.
Good.
So that's Sonic's.
That's pretty good. I do have to
miles
say,
miles per hour with chamomile. You see what's going on there? Mm-hmm. I can explain this more.
I am a little disappointed. What's the name of our sender?
Wayne.
I'm a little disappointed that Wayne didn't go with a tie-in with the video game Steep.
let me see if there's just Steep in here. Yeah. Anyway, he says. You're number 519 fan and number 26 nemesis. I don't know what that means. And he says, P.S. all teas lovingly prepared by my coworker and fiance, Julia Amberg. And P.S.S. we usually outsource labels for customers, so the quality isn't the best, but we tried our sweet little NY hearts best. He's from New York. So they do these custom teas for people. That's their business, which I think is really neat. Anyway, thank you for the teas. And then, you know, we have some big tea fans on the staff here that we will get these to.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Are they loose leaf teas, Sam?
I don't know what that means. What do you think?
They are.
I've been meaning to get one of those metal steeper things.
I thought you just put this whole thing in your mug.
Oh, yeah, plastic and everything.
All right, that's been Tea Scoop. I have one for next week as well.
Okay.
Is it also tea?
Please be excited.
I called it Tea Scoop.
Okay. Okay, another email. This is Kev from Sheffield. Kev says, Sheffield is home of Sumo Digital. He says, as a 38-year-old British gamer, my formative years were a very different experience than yours. I often hear about these days on even brilliant game shows such as your own, and I just wanted to raise this as I feel it's a part of gaming that isn't really recognized. Growing up, it was very rare to meet people with an NES. No one ever mentioned Contra or Mega Man, a whole host of other games that now have risen to classic status. We didn't have the video games crash. We never buried anything in the moors, which is the closest we have to a desert, I believe. We never had the experience of not owning a lot of games because tapes and discs were so cheap in comparison to carts. So the Amiga, Commodore 64, Spectrum, Acorn, Sinclair, Amstrad, Atari ST, even the BBC Micro are machines that are hugely important. And whilst it might not look like a fantastic era in retrospect, without it, we wouldn't have had Grand Theft Auto, Wipeout, Tomb Raider, Football Manager, Total War, XCOM, anything made by Rare, and a whole host of others, all of which are titles from British and European studios who trace their roots back to that tape and disc scene in some form. I hope you read this out. If for no reason, then it would be cool to hear the names of my favorite machines on my favorite podcast.
One's called an Acorn.
Yeah.
That's so cute.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about gamers who like grew up in the 80s, early 90s, just having different experiences based on where you live.
Yeah. I mean, you know, once Jared Petty didn't work here anymore, we kind of stopped hearing about the ZX Spectrum as much as we used to, didn't we, when he was on the show?
Yeah. That's true.
That's absolutely true. There was an era of Game Scoop in which we were very representative of obscure British PC systems. We are just past that. So if you missed that era of British PC games, like our question earlier, he just answered what you missed, which I think is really convenient. Now we know.
It's true.
Some of those games made their way over onto like DOS. And so I have some memories of them from my youth, but no, like obviously, you know, all of us were playing games on the NES or on other home consoles.
Yeah, for sure.
It blew my mind the first time there was like a Rare collection here where it was like, oh, I thought I was going to be seeing Battletoads and stuff like that. And then it was like all this crazy PC stuff. They made so many games and they're like pretty neat.
Yeah.
Okay, I gotta wonder, like, console wise these days, like kids that are growing up with this generation or the last few generations of consoles, like dependent on what your parents decided you were going to be committing your allegiance to, like what was your experience like versus a friend's, if you don't have, like, if you're strictly PlayStation or strictly Xbox or whatever else. I think that's why a lot of people grew up with Halo or not.
There's definitely developed parts of the world that have completely different ecosystems for games, and you know, Brazil is really different than here. There was retro systems there that were, you know, still producing games until, you know, pretty recently, that we call retro, like the Genesis. And then there's China, which doesn't have a lot of, you know, of the same console stuff, but a huge PC gamer system there. And you know, there's government regulation, all kinds of stuff that change how people perceive games in a, you know, in a giant country on Earth right now.
Yeah, only in the last few years did China allow video game consoles to be sold there again.
There's no more StarCraft II content for them.
Is it not? Is it banned from there?
No. It's huge on the East, but it's also Blizzard is not developing content for it anymore.
That's just right. It just
patches
stopped.
And fixes. Yeah.
Yeah. Scoop.
They're like, we're done.
A couple of GDCs ago, Tina and Sam and I went to a talk from the creator of Lemmings. The retro game postmortem, is that what they call it? Classic gaming postmortem.
Classic game.
Yeah. That, and like that is sort of like the era that Kev from Sheffield is referring to there.
Yeah, and they showed like, you know, they all worked on, you know, PC games and like little offices and stuff. It was like a very indie scene. And that company, you know, became elements of Rockstar and stuff like that. He's exactly right in pointing out like we wouldn't have these giant things without that PC scene there. I like that point about tapes and discs being, you know, cheap ways to distribute stuff. The underlying thing there is that they're cheap because they're rewritable. So you just stole everything. Like, you know, we were unable to do a lot of game bootlegging in the United States when we were all growing up, because like if you had a PlayStation 2, you probably just got used PlayStation 2 games. You didn't get a bunch of burned PlayStation 2 copies. But boy, it was not like that before 1990 on PCs. And even in the 90s, right? Everything you got was stolen. That's still like a huge underground market for cracked PC games, obviously. But man, if that's all you had was like big discs of free games, like that's pretty cool.
Extracurricular activities. A couple episodes ago, I commanded Scoop Nation watch Cobra Kai on Netflix. If you have finished Cobra Kai and you're looking for something else, I finished season 2 of The Boys, and it's really, really good. Highly recommend it. It is well documented on the show that I like blood and guts, and The Boys is a satisfactory show for me. Tita, have you watched season 2?
Yes, and they somehow managed to one-up themselves every single episode as far as the blood and guts go. You're like, what is it possibly going to be next time? Just a sea of blood and every scene? But maybe. They did it.
And aside from that, I think it's a really good show. Did you enjoy it?
I did. I loved it. And I just finished season 1 of Cobra Kai because it's literally the only TV show my oldest brother will watch. And he has been rewatching every single episode with me.
Are you into it?
Very much so. Yeah. Cool. I mean, yes. I liked Karate Kid growing up. I love that they're playing into the he deserved more and like actually making a whole show out of it. There's an interesting dichotomy of like person who grew up in that time period and is now confronted with students of a more woke culture and some of that dynamic being played out, which is probably relevant to a lot of Americans these days.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
Yeah, it's great.
So that's on my to-do list. That's my next up. I just finished Avatar. I'm going to do that next. But I'm thinking about taking, I don't know whether to do this yet. I was wondering if you guys have watched it, but I kind of want to watch the new Haunting season because it's a spooky time of year.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of horror, but I'm like 7 episodes in and it just hasn't really struck me.
Oh, our really?
Okay. Basically, okay. Yeah, it's just different than the first or the first, whatever, the first Haunting series from last year. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's obviously a different context for this time around. Mm-hmm. But our review mentioned something that I kind of agree with, too, which is it's just got a much slower pace and it doesn't have the same kind of scares or thrills. So it's just slower.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Pear says Cobra Kai 7. First.
A 7?
Yeah. That's Pear's rating.
Yeah. I'll give it a score when I'm done with it. Yeah. I'm still pushing through.
All right. That's good. That helps me make my call.
But then what do you think of Avatar, Sam?
I loved it. It was so good. It gets better and better, too. Like, they kind of re-throw all of the same relationships at each other and mix them all up. And everybody, you find a different side of everybody, except for Zuko's sister, who's just evil the whole time. And it's really, really fun. And I really like how it wrapped up. And then I hated the very last scene. I thought it was very gross and weird.
Gross. Wow.
Yeah.
I forget what the last scene was.
It was the kiss.
Yeah.
It was a kiss.
Yeah. It was all building towards that.
It did build towards that. It just felt very strange, and I was surprised that it ended up that way. But I did like how the rest of the series resolved, and there's so many elements, like you were mentioning for Cobra Kai, with Star Wars in it, and I know that team went on to work on the Star Wars cartoons. If you,
I also loved Lovecraft Country, and I think unpopular opinion, but I like Raised by Wolves, too.
Mm. Oh, is that unpopular? No way. That show's dope. That's great.
Yeah.
I've heard some people like pass on it fairly early on, and it is weird. Like the first episode, you are kind of weirded out by it. Like, what are these androids and these like futuristic costumes that are just really form fitting? Like, what's the point of this? But once you get beyond the first episode and like actually accept the universe and the lore and the costume work and whatnot, then it gets really good.
The Davis household loves Raised by Wolves.
Wow,
good to know.
That's the Ridley Scott one.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? Okay.
Well, he did the pilot episode.
Pilot episode, okay.
Was it all released at once, or is it in season?
It was week by week. Okay. Then now it's all done.
Okay, cool. That's what I was waiting for.
I watched Ted Lasso, and it's my favorite new show of the year. It's just the best. It's a 10 out of 10. It's the most uplifting, perfect thing to be watching in 2020. Best show, Ted Lasso. So
I've heard that name, but I don't know anything about it. Like, what's the elevator pitch?
It's about an American football coach who is sort of a doofus. He's sort of a hick, but then it turns out he's actually very smart. Like, that's the conceit of his character. And then he goes over to England to teach football, like a soccer team, a Premier League soccer team, and doesn't know what he's doing, but then eventually wins them all over. And he's just a very heartfelt, genuine, nice, kind guy that wins everybody over. And like, they all start out against him and they all end up being on his side by the end of the show.
It's SNL Jason, right?
Jason Sudeikis. Yeah.
Jason Sudeikis. Yeah.
Yeah. He's the main character. and it's on Apple TV, which I still get. I got free for a year because I bought an iPad. So it's like, you got a free year of Apple TV. Then they sent me an email that's like, oh, you can have it free for another 3 months. I'm like, okay. Yeah. So, you know, it's, you know, I think a lot of people are probably still in their free Apple TV period, and I cannot recommend it highly enough.
Wow, a sports show at the top of Justin's list.
Yeah, but it's not a sports show. Like, that's the thing, right? Like, it's not about soccer in the same way. Well, I don't have an analogy about it, but that's like, that's there in the background, but it's not what the show's actually about.
It must be like Friday Night Lights, where you don't have to be a big football fan, right, to love Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
Okay, and that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Joshua No. And he actually has an easy mode and a hard mode. I know two of us have a hard out at 3:30. So we'll start on easy mode and we'll see how it goes. Let the questioning begin.
We don't get like a sentence to.
No, there are no. He didn't provide any meta hints.
We got too many hints last time. So although you know, decided this, no more sentences.
You know, this is supposedly an easy mode game. So.
Right.
Is it a spooky game?
No.
Then why did you pick it? You know what time. We're Halloween. All wearing Halloween elements.
Not yet.
The guy said he wanted something spooky.
Is it from this generation?
No.
Is this a 90s game?
No.
Is it a platform exclusive?
Yes.
Is it exclusive on a Sony platform?
No. That's 5.
Is this a Nintendo game?
No.
Well, I thought it was easy mode.
Is this exclusive on an Xbox platform?
No.
Oh, no.
So PC?
I think it's Angry Birds.
Is it a mobile game?
I don't really think sure. it's
Angry Birds. Is that easy mode?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We never talk about mobile games, so that feels like it wouldn't.
Well, it's either from a weird system from before the 90s, before the console wars mattered, or it's on a Sega system, or it's on a system after 2000.
But it wouldn't be a Sega system if it's not a 90s game, probably. I mean, it could be, obviously, but like unlikely. I don't know what that leaves us with. PC? Is this a PC exclusive?
No.
Damn it.
I feel like we're burning questions on this easy one.
Well,
it's not to figure out what exclusive it is. Is it a Sega game?
No.
All right. Maybe it's an arcade game.
Is it a mobile game?
No. And that's 10.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Is it an arcade game?
No.
What are you doing to us?
I'm not doing anything. Joshua No is doing this.
So hold on. Let's take a beat.
I guess it's a TurboGrafx game.
Yeah, it's not. It's not a 90s game, and it's not a current gen game. I think it's unlikely to be a 2000s game because it's also not a Sega, Nintendo, Xbox, PlayStation, mobile, arcade, or PC game.
Is this from before 1990?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So,
Atari.
Yeah, that's something Atari or ColecoVision or something. Is this an Atari exclusive?
Yes.
Great.
You know, that's actually kind of hard because everything came to everything.
To not be on arcades.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that narrows it down.
I mean, E.T.
Adventure. Is this based on a license?
Yes.
Is this game notoriously horrible and just really, really, just truly bottom of the barrel?
Yes. That's 15.
It's E.T.
It is E.T. It is E.T. for the 2600. 1982.
Nice.
Man, we almost got worked there.
Mm-hmm. That was went down a bad path.
All right, well, that was your warm-up for hard mode.
Oh, boy.
God.
Did this game come out before January 1st, 1990?
No.
It's not another Atari game.
It's from after 2000?
Yes.
Is it a platform exclusive?
No.
Is it on Switch?
Yes.
Oh, thank God. All right. We got this.
It's part of a series?
No.
Is this game on a Switch cart?
This is kind of a roller coaster right now.
If it is, it'd be like a limited run games situation.
Okay.
It wasn't initially released on a cart.
So if it's a Switch game, it's a Switch eShop port.
Is this an indie game?
Yes.
Is this an indie game developed in the United States?
No.
Does this dev have any other game?
That's a good question.
Mm-hmm. Not that I know of.
Yeah, because like Stardew Valley and stuff like that.
Yeah, although I think, maybe he's not. He might be Canadian. I don't know if he's in the U.S. But, okay, was this game developed in Japan?
No. That's 10.
Could be Undertale.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's in the U.S. either, if Toby Fox is here. I don't know where he lives.
Huh.
Oh, so this developer has made other games. I just didn't realize they were the developer of these other games.
Okay.
Okay. Noted.
Is there a strong narrative element to this game?
No.
Is it a roguelike?
No.
I think it's Ding Dong XL.
Did you make that up? I don't even know what that is.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, we played it every day. Every day for like a month.
Yeah, it was on the show. I have a shirt.
I don't recall.
That's the game with the ball thing bouncing back and forth. We have to dodge the shapes that we played on the big TV that we played for like a month.
Yeah. Ugh.
That game's great. I bought that game 3 times now on my computer, Switch, and phone.
It's on Switch though, so
is this like a high score driven game?
No.
But it's also not
narrative, huh?
And not narrative. Is it a roguelike?
No, we asked that already.
Oh, that's sorry. Right.
And no.
What was it?
Is this a loot based game?
No.
Does this game have like a 8-bit, like 8 or 16-bit pixel aesthetic to it?
Yes. That's 15. Yes, that's 15.
What was that platformer? What was the platformer?
Mutant Muds?
Yeah, that's not what I was thinking of. I was thinking of the ninja one. That Katana Zero, is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Katana Zero. And then there's also the Dig games.
Yeah, SteamWorld. Is Katana Zero the one that switches between 8 and 16-bit, or what was that game?
Yes, it did that. I think so. Okay. But there was another game that did that, too.
It's where you can rewind time.
What?
In Katana Zero.
And you rewind it to, like, an 8-bit look, right?
No, I don't recall any of that. You can, like, if you mess up, you can rewind your moves. Like,
I might be thinking of a different game.
Style.
Yeah.
There was some game that came out recently that had both art styles in it, and it was like the first half of the game, then the second half.
Is there ninja fighting in this game?
There's a ninja in it.
Okay, it's not Katana Zero then.
Maybe it's a Nidhogg game.
Oh yeah.
Are Nidhogg games on the eShop?
Two.
I don't know. There's a ninja in the game, but Damon won't commit to ninja fighting.
Is this a competitive two-player game?
No.
Like, all fighting games would be that, for example.
Mm-hmm. So we're assuming single player?
Do we have Probably. 3 questions left, Damon?
You have 2 questions and a guess.
Shoot. Is it helpful to know? We don't know that it's a platformer. Like a 2D side scroller.
Yeah, I'm just assuming that. Assumed. Yeah. Let's go down the ninja path. There is a ninja in the game. Maybe it's like a boss or a singular enemy.
And it is hard mode, so it's probably unlikely to be Katana Zero or something that's like a little bit more well known. Kitty agrees.
I actually don't know if you actually kill stuff in this game. It's not narrative though, so would it be maybe it's puzzle?
A ninja in it.
Yeah.
Could it be that game that
Damon
likes?
And not fight.
Yeah, like that puzzle fighter type stuff. What's the bubble bubble puyo puyo type thing? Does that have characters in it?
No. Bust a move.
I kind of want to ask if we've reviewed the game.
Oh yeah, that's a good one.
Because if we didn't, then surely it is far more obscure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
Or if it was well received.
Yeah, you should ask if we reviewed it. I think that's good. That's good.
Okay, did we? Yes, look at that. Of course we didn't.
Oh, please.
Kitty, just wait.
I hope we did.
Should we ask if it's a spooky game?
I think you asked. Oh, wait, you asked that the last round.
Okay. Yes.
We reviewed it.
IGN did review it.
Should we ask if Tom Marks reviewed it?
Probably. Can we phone a friend?
Yeah, exactly. If we guess the reviewer, can we call the reviewer?
It could still
be. We should have one of those options for hard modes. Phone a friend or whatever.
Pretty cute. Like
what is the name of that game? I think it's probably that game.
Which one?
The one that has both 8-bit and 16-bit modes in it. Kitty.
Is this a platformer?
Yes.
Yeah.
That brings us to our guess.
Now we have to guess.
Your hint is that this is a Super Damien game. I played the heck out of it, but yeah. I'm probably the only one of us that did.
Yeah.
What was the one? I mean, well, it's not the one that you reviewed. Damon reviewed. You reviewed that eShop game not too long ago, Damon, that had an 8-bit art style. But you would not have to hesitate to know whether we reviewed it if you reviewed it.
No, we all forget what games we've reviewed before, for sure. Mm-hmm. On this show, no less.
Yeah, I remember Damon liking a game like this and knowing about it. I just don't remember it at all.
The one I'm thinking of, Panzer Paladin, but Damon would have. It's not Panzer Paladin. Damon, did you review Panzer Paladin?
No, Seth did.
It might be Panzer Paladin. I don't know if that game has a ninja.
What about? Oh man, no, it's not that. Because that would be obvious. I think we would, because I'm thinking of roguelikes, like Dead Cells and stuff like that. So it's not that.
Could be Dead Cells.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess that's a roguelike, though.
Yeah, I think we have to give this one up.
Mm-hmm. Shall I reveal it?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
We don't want to guess?
I don't have to
throw something out there.
Well, I mean, is it Katana Zero?
No.
Okay.
It is not. RIP. Released in 2015. Developed by Free Lives, the South African studio Free Lives, which also did Genital Jousting and VR game Gorn. And this game was published by Devolver Digital.
Mm-hmm.
It is a run-and-gun platformer called Broforce.
Oh.
Right.
I remember seeing that name.
Yeah, I remember seeing it at a PAX or something.
It's like a Contra-like?
Yes, but that really leans into 80s action hero tropes and characters that are very literally based on 80s action heroes. There's like Robocop, Conan the Barbarian, Bromando. It's all
what's
like that.
What's up with the ninja?
They're like, it's like there's Chuck Norris in there, there's Van Damme in there. So one of those guys has got to be a ninja.
Those aren't ninjas.
There's,
you don't even know for sure that there's a ninja?
There's Bruce Lee in there too. There's got to be a ninja in there. I'm confident there's a ninja in Broforce somewhere, because there's so many different characters.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't play it. I looped that game in with like, what was it, like Super Time Force, and like there's those games had like a resurgence there for a hot second.
Yeah, for sure. And The Messenger is the game you're thinking of that switches between 8 and 16 bit art styles.
That's right.
Yeah.
Lording it over us.
Nope. Just... and there you go. Now you two of us have 7 minutes to. Do whatever they
Look
want
with
before,
yeah.
Great.
Before yeah. their 3:30 meeting. Everybody, please be excited for next week's Game Spook episode 600. Apparently, Sam will have another tea scoop for us. But that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Thank you to Tina. Thank you, Justin. Thank you, Sam. Thank you, Borba. Remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@IGN.com. My name is Damon. This is IGN Game Scoop. And we're out.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.